The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very good morning to you. Boker Tov, how are you?
Boker Tov. Historic visit to Israel by the president of Ecuador, President Guillermo Lasso, is in Israel, and he was hosted last night along with his wife by Israeli President Isaac Herzog and his wife Michal at a state dinner. President Lasso is in Israel on a state visit, an official visit, the very first time that a president from Ecuador has actually visited Israel. So this is good news. And even though Ecuador might not necessarily be one of those countries at the forefront of international diplomacy, it is always good to have positive relations with countries around the world, whoever they happen to be. There's always something in common that one can find, and something some cooperation that can be achieved. So good news for Israel.
Absolutely right. Not good news especially for the woman that was killed. And it's actually quite unbelievable is that this the Al Jazeera journalist who lost her life yesterday, we know nothing about her. No one's talking about the details of who she was, what her professional life was, who her family was, just being used as political currency, and very, very upsetting as to how she's almost been commoditized, I think. I mean, maybe that's just my rant, but really, really upset by this whole story and the way in which it's been handled. The death of Al Jazeera journalist in Jenin during an IDF raid in the city has created controversy. Of course it has. Anthony, what happened yesterday?
Well, I'm not exactly sure what happened. The simple facts are that Shireen Abu Akleh was an Al Jazeera journalist, 51-year-old, joint dual citizen of both America and apparently the Palestinian Authority. Mm-hmm. And she was in Jenin in order to cover an IDF raid in the city. And we understand that IDF troops, along with security forces from the Shin Bet and other Israeli security personnel, were in Jenin in order to carry out some arrests following the recent spate of terror attacks that has taken place across Israel. And it's hardly surprising that from time to time the IDF will need to go in to places like Jenin, which is considered to be a hotbed of anti-Israel activity, terror activity, in order to do some cleaning up and in order to try to safeguard Israeli citizens so that we can all go about our daily business in relative peace and security. And so Shireen Abu Akleh had obviously got wind of this IDF raid in Jenin, and she happened to be there in order to cover it on behalf of Al Jazeera, which is, I think, what journalists do. They like to go into some of these very, very dangerous places in order to cover from the scene of the crime or from the scene of the activity. And it turns out that she was struck by a bullet in the head, which effectively killed her. I don't think that there was any way that she could have escaped from that. Now, the question as to where this bullet came from and who shot the bullet seems to be indeterminate at the moment. There has been no way to determine it. And what we understand is that both the Israeli authorities and the Palestinian authorities have done some investigation into this, and both of them have come back saying they cannot determine whose bullet it was that killed this journalist. Of course, the death of a journalist in a place like that is always going to be highly controversial, because it's always kind of seen as an hypocrisy to try and prevent reports from going out to the world at large about some of the things that are going on in the Kasbah of Jenin or whatever, you know, is going down in that particular hotbed area. And so it's always going to be controversial that journalists get killed in the line of fire when they're trying to cover stories like this. And of course, there is always an angle that these journalists like to come from. Shireen Abu Akleh happened to be accompanied at the time by another journalist who was covering the story on behalf of the Quds newspaper, which is a Jerusalem-based newspaper. And this other journalist who was there was also struck. He is a journalist by the name of Ali Samoudi, and he was struck in the back by gunfire. He has managed to survive, but he has very much come out claiming that they were shot at by Israeli forces. All of a sudden, they opened fire at us, is what he said from his hospital bed, and he claimed that no one had warned him. And he also claimed, his words are, they killed her in cold blood. One bullet hit me, the second hit Shireen. And he claims that there were no Palestinian resistance fighters in the area, even though the Palestinian authorities, when investigating the situation, have clearly acknowledged that it could well have come from the gun of one of their resistance fighters, because otherwise they would have said quite clearly, this cannot have come from us. This is definitely a bullet that has come from the IDF, because there simply weren't other people around who could have shot him. But that's not what they've said. They've said that they cannot determine whose bullet has shot her and has killed her. The IDF has said the same thing. So clearly there was crossfire going on at that particular time in Jenin. And together, when looking at the bullet itself and when examining the angle from which the bullet actually entered her head and where people were located at that particular time, both of the parties have examined the situation, have said, we don't know. We can't determine exactly what happened. Now, the IDF has invited the Palestinian Authority to cooperate in a joint investigation, to work together to see whether they can together find what the answer to this this question is. The Chief of General Staff, Aviv Kochavi, has become involved, and he has expressed his regret and condolences upon the death of this journalist. And equally so, Benny Gantz, the Minister of Defense, as well as Prime Minister Naftali Bennett, have all weighed in on the argument and, of course, have expressed their regret as to what the events as to the events that took place, but have also said that Israel would like to cooperate in order to find out the truth. So even though Prime Minister Naftali Bennett has said he doesn't think that the bullet came from an IDF soldier, he's not necessarily ruling that possibility out, and we're all eager to find out. I think one thing that can be absolutely clear is that in the event that this bullet may have come from an IDF soldier, it clearly wasn't done purposefully. There's no reason why Israel would wish
to target journalists. I was just going to say, where's the upside? Where's the upside for Israel in targeting a journalist? It's an absurdity. But Anthony, I don't understand this. It's actually relatively simple. There's a bullet, and there's evidence, and that bullet killed somebody. Surely that can be matched to a gun. I wouldn't say not rocket science, but certainly it isn't out of the realm of what we do today in forensics.
Correct. I mean, it is not rocket science, it's ballistic science, and of course it can be determined. But I think in order for that to be determined, one would have to then take in all of the various weapons that were fired at that stage during that particular incident from both sides, from both the Palestinian resistance side as well as the IDF side, and look at all of the different weapons and try somehow to match the bullet with the weapon. It is, of course, something that can be done over time. It's not something that in a day or two can be determined right away. So there was a view that potentially, quite quickly, one party could be blamed or the other party could be blamed for this particular incident. But that has not been the case. And I think, to be fair, even though the Palestinian Authority have come out saying that, you know, this is clearly Israel's fault and Israel will need to take full blame for it. And interestingly, Shireen's funeral, which is due to take place later today, will leave from the Mukatta in Ramallah, which is, of course, the central location where the Palestinian Authority has their offices and their government, the Mukatta, and it will leave from the Mukatta in the presence of Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas, and will then proceed to Jerusalem, where she will ultimately be buried. So there is a certain kind of ceremony that's being sanctioned by the Palestinian Authority in this particular case, and of course they're using it as fodder against Israel. The question is whether it really matters who killed her. The journalist was in an extremely dangerous place.
Absolutely right.
It happens, unfortunately. Mm. It happens,
and there was clearly no intention on either side for this journalist to be killed.
I don't think so, yeah.
Because it doesn't serve the Palestinians either, because she works for Al Jazeera. The other guy works for for Quds. Both of those are absolutely viciously and aggressively and very often dishonestly against Israel. So therefore, it doesn't serve serve the Palestinian cause to kill them. But nor does it serve Israel in any way to kill a journalist globally. It's a disaster for Israel from a PR perspective. So it is very clear that there was no intention, and it's tragic in terms of a woman losing her life. But again, as you said, she certainly had full knowledge of the situation that she was in.
Yeah, she was very much in the line of fire. There is no doubt about that. I don't know that it's going to serve any purpose to find out one way or the other exactly who fired that bullet, because as you rightly say, I don't think anybody intended it. No matter who fired the bullet, she happened just to be in the crossfire. So maybe it's just as well that we don't know who fired it. Mm. And just simply to say it was unintentional, it is regrettable, it was something that we would not want to see again. Journalists take heed of the fact that it is dangerous to go into Jenin during times like that. So maybe it's better for you not to be in the line of fire. But ultimately, this is really nobody's fault.
Yeah, interesting. Jonathan says what is amazing is that the world has been pretty much silent on the death of other journalists. 16 journalists have died in other conflicts, but yet this one gets the attention. The other problem, of course, and I see it in the South African space, in the South African media particularly, is that there's been no reporting, if any, on the constant terror attacks in Israel and people losing their lives. So without that context, all of a sudden, the South African public is confronted by the death of a journalist. And you almost can't blame them, allegedly, by Israel. In fact, we've dropped the word allegedly when it comes to Israel, I've noticed. It's only alleged if it's Israelis who are killed by Palestinians. But that aside, we don't see any context. And then we see this announcement that Israel has killed a journalist, and you almost can't blame people who are not knowledgeable about this and who don't make it their business to be knowledgeable about to be very angered about Israel. This is going to have a very negative impact around the world largely because media has been irresponsible in not reporting things within any context.
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, I think even if people reported in a more balanced way and say, well, a journalist was killed during the time of an IDF raid in the city of Jenin. Mm. Okay, so you don't even have to say that they were killed by Israel, but you can be absolutely truthful and say, journalist killed during the time of an IDF raid in Jenin. It kind of just, you know, everybody jumps to their own conclusions, right? And so you don't even need to go that far of saying allegedly or unallegedly by Israeli forces. You don't need to add that even, because people automatically assume that when the IDF is active in Jenin and when a journalist from Al Jazeera happens to be there, you can put two and two together and get five.
Mm. Absolutely. I'd love your reaction, please. How should we be treating this? 34519 or 0618951019. The government, the governing coalition, lost a vote in the Knesset while one of its members was giving a TV interview. Is the government really going to be able to function like this, Anthony?
Well, the question is whether the country is going to be able to function without this government. I think that's the more serious question, because, of course, here we have a situation where a vote goes to the Knesset. You know, admittedly not perhaps one of the more serious votes, not something which is a vote of no confidence in the government, but nonetheless, a piece of ordinary course of business that needs to be put through the Knesset. The governing coalition should, in theory, be able to get this piece of business through and move on to the next thing. And of course, because one of the members of the government happens to be outside of the Knesset building, or just outside the plenum, giving a TV interview, the vote takes place, and lo and behold, a member from Likud who previously wasn't there, and so the government thought that they were home and dry, all of a sudden makes an appearance just at the last moment in order to cast his vote and to stop the piece of legislation being passed. So we're, you know, in a slightly kind of in a situation where we're kind of slightly frozen, I suppose, in terms of getting certain pieces of legislation through the Knesset. But I suppose that it also means that people are going to need to be a little bit more diligent about turning up and casting their vote and making sure that whatever is really required to pass through the Knesset manages to get the vote. There's going to be a need to be a lot of lobbying and getting support from potentially members of Knesset from outside of the coalition to get the most important pieces of business through. But, you know, we are in a situation where things are difficult, no doubt, but I still think better than it could be if somehow the government was toppled.
Absolutely, absolutely right. I think there's no doubt about that. Finally, Israel's fiscal deficit has shrunk below 1% of GDP. What's caused this reduction?
So, yeah, this is a phenomenal story because when you look at what Israel's fiscal deficit has been over the time, before the elections in 2019, the fiscal deficit was 3.7% of GDP. And then during the period of Corona, the fiscal deficit went up even more due to the fact that obviously the government was dishing out all kinds of help to people to get through Corona. And in fact, in the 12 months to the end of April 2021, the fiscal deficit was as high as 15.7%. Now we get to looking at the period which is to the end of the 12 months to the end of April. And we suddenly discover that the fiscal deficit has fallen from that high level of 15.7%. And even if we take out the effects of Corona and go back to before the previous election when things were at 3.7%, all of a sudden now we're in a situation that the fiscal deficit is 0.6% of GDP. So that's just an amazing turnaround. And apparently Israel's finance ministry accountant general has reported that income, there's been such a massive surplus over the last few months that April was apparently the fourth individual month in succession in which there was actually a fiscal surplus that Israel was running. So some quite responsible economics going on in order to manage Israel's economy. Fiscal surplus apparently of 31.4 billion shekels has been recorded just since the beginning of this calendar year. So a great response to what has been a very, very tough economic situation over the COVID pandemic period. And Israel reporting now such a small fiscal deficit and potentially even moving into a surplus situation, because if this monthly surplus situation continues, we could potentially be moving into a surplus when we look back 12 months and just see what's been happening. So I think that this is a credit to Finance Minister Avigdor Lieberman, who's been doing a great job of managing Israel's economy, but also just shows the health that we see here. We spoke yesterday about the number of jobs that are available, people wanting to move jobs and to get into new areas of business. And this is certainly being reflected as well in our economic situation.
Anthony Reich, thank you. As always, wishing you a fantastic weekend, a Shabbat Shalom, and we will catch you on Monday morning at 7:45.